Hello and welcome to our 49th episode of the Gutenberg Changelog podcast. In today's episode, we will talk about the Gutenberg plugin release 11.2 and drag and drop flex layout, core data shortcuts, and modern WordPress development. I'm Birgit Pauli-Haag, curator at the Gutenberg Times, and I'm here with my co-host, Jago Stolkowski, code wrangler at Automattic and WordPress core contributor. Good morning, Jagos. How are you doing? I'm so glad that we are in the same time zone together for the next two or three episodes. And good morning to our listeners. We are glad you join us again for this episode. So how are you this morning, Jagos?
Good morning, Birgit. I'm so happy to be recording this one in the morning for the first time. It's such a refreshing experience and something new. Everything is great here, and like I guess the weather is similar at your place now, like in Poland. Like it's changing rapidly every day. So yesterday it was sunny, then raining. Today it's cloudy. So you know you have everything.
Yeah.
How about your place? How do you enjoy it?
Oh yeah, we're in the same weather. We have it changes per the hour. Like we have 1 hour, we have sunshine, and then we have thunderstorms, and then it comes back. It's almost like Florida. So, but I'm here in the makeshift office with my at my parents' house. It's kind of working from home. It's a little bit different because we all have it's a bigger household, of course. And it took us an evening to distribute the fast internet that comes in on the second floor to the basement. But there is something like it's wired through the power grid. This is actually spectacular. Yeah, I hard lined in through the network. It's very interesting what they put together here.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm keen to learn more after the show about that because I don't have the cable to my office, and sometimes the Wi-Fi isn't great enough, and I missed that when I was preparing everything. So I'm glad that there are some other ways to do it.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be happy to get deeper into that. So, yeah, for our show today, we have the first section today is a community contribution. And I appreciate Chris Wiegman and Markus Kazmierczak blogging about WordPress development in 2021. And they're trying to define the barriers to entry for WordPress users. Are they low? Are they high? I think we're all getting a few blurry lines depending on what kind of stakeholders or what kind of users you're talking about. I haven't read all of the blog posts, and I definitely need to read them again. But Chris Wiegman started the discussion on Twitter with, and I quote him, "The deeper I get with modern WordPress development, the more I understand why newer devs don't like to work on it. This is not the same project that I was in the past. The learning curve is now extremely high regardless of past experience," end quote of Chris Wiegman on the Twitterverse. And we'll link to that tweet in our show notes. And there are quite a few that chimed in on it. There was Alan Schlesser and Rich Tabor and others.
Matthias Ventura.
Matthias Ventura, yes. Jessica Leischik as well from Germany. And Markus Kazmierczak, I might have butchered his last name, but I need to ask him how to pronounce his name. He wrote a blog post about modern WordPress development, pretty much as an answer to Chris Wiegman. And Chris Wiegman actually put some more thoughts into it on his blog with changing WordPress ecosystems. Yeah, what do you think about it? You came from a different content management system to WordPress many years ago.
So yeah, I started like a development with Drupal, and it was like maybe 10 years ago. And the entry level for Drupal is so high that going back to WordPress seems like, you are in a familiar place and everything is so simple. So it really depends on your background, what you think. If you have a strong PHP background, then it might be easier to start with Drupal than with WordPress. If you don't have any experience, it's going to be hard no matter what you would like to do. So, you know, it's definitely a very complex topic. One thing that I would like to emphasize that WordPress has this page with the philosophy it shares. So one of the sections is designed for the majority. So it says that the way that WordPress is structured should be optimized for the end users rather for the developers. And this is happening with full site editing. And that's why there is now this impression that writing for the, like extending the block editor is hard. And it's something that definitely needs more attention, but it's also a very complex thing to operate in this area of very rich user experience and having so many features that's so tightly related to the DOM, to the browser. So, you know, it's not an easy place to be with when you are a developer. So I suspect that if you would like to achieve even like half of the goals that the Gutenberg gives you in the classic editor, I don't think that it would be doable at all.
Yeah, and I like how Marcus iterated that the competition between WordPress is for WordPress, and it has had a remarkable growth rate even in the last 4 years, going up to 42%. The competition is not Drupal or Wix or Squarespace. The competition are actually the social networks who made it so easy to create a post like on Instagram, connect with Venmo, and then have a shop up there. So following that path, there is an expectation from the users to also make it as easy as possible and intuitive as possible. And of course, the block editor is for quite a few developers a moving target, moving the goalposts kind of still move because the team hasn't finished developing it. It's still on its way. And listening to Matt Molovic, he says it's going to be a 10-year, we are 2 years or 4 years in into a 10-year project. So it will be that way and probably settle down quite a bit, but there is always keep moving. But I'm also wanted to outline, I found a tweet by Matt Edgar, who's an editor and writer, and he says, I fear that WordPress goes the Microsoft Ballmer way, where it's all about developers, 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 and not about users, users, users. So that's the whole other extreme there. And right now it seems we are on a middle path. I'm not sure it's the right path, but it's at least kind of, if you offset both sides a bit, there's something new coming by. But Chris Lemmer actually posted his latest blog post was about using WordPress without writing any code. And so that's the goal pretty much, but he is actually preparing for a presentation on a non-WordPress conference and that don't use WordPress all that much, but wants to make a case for WordPress. So that blog post was very interesting to me as well, figuring out how to do this without, there's a few plugins that he uses, but most of it is based on the native block editor. So I think there is a great discussion going on and we all need to be a little bit more taking someone who has been successful with WordPress for 10 years and doing what they're doing, bringing them all along, but bringing them piece by piece and also teach a lot about the new tools there, like React, like NPM and all this new cool features that are hard to learn sometimes when you haven't been in the space for a long time. Yeah, I see it for myself. Yeah, I came from two WordPress former a total different programming language. And I programmed my own content management system until I saw WordPress offering so many features out of the box on their free plugins. I wasn't able to charge my clients that much for custom developers when there is a different system out there that you can use or they can use. And I started WordPress 10 years ago and took only for 5 years until we actually had to write code, PHP code. But I was a PHP novice. I didn't get into it until writing code about 6 years ago or something like that in PHP. And it was so easy for an implementer to do that. Yeah, and it will still be that. But I will never say But for our clients, it was never easy to use WordPress. Yeah, when we say that it's easy to use WordPress 10 years ago, it wasn't really. Yeah. There were multiple, I think, was it Tamalista who did a rundown from how to change a theme at the beginning of Gutenberg? I think she had 62 steps to change a theme. Yeah, so
I can imagine that.
Yeah, so it's getting really easier and easier, but of course there is a disruption there and we'll use different tools there. So I guess we have a lot of reading material for our listeners, and we certainly wish that you communicate with us your ideas or what you think, and maybe also be a little bit more specific on when you find it hard to work with WordPress, what exactly is it that trips you up, or that sometimes it's small things, sometimes it's a big thing, yeah? And we all learn with that going forward. So we will have the blog, Chris Wiedemann's blog, his tweet and the thread around it, Markus Kazmierczak's modern WordPress development, linked to the WordPress philosophy. And we also have Chris Lemmer's using WordPress without writing any code in the show notes for you to read, which brings us to what's released. The Gutenberg 11.2. Do you want to get us into it?
Oh, sure. Let's start with features. So this plugin release, it doesn't bring so many new features. It's obviously the reason why it happens is because there is a summer on the Northern Hemisphere and a lot of contributors that I engaged on a daily basis were not present. So there is definitely some slowdown. This is also a great time to do some improvements for the developers so they don't feel left out. And there are also some efforts to improve performance on the features level. So most of the work is around blocks and adding support functionality, which support is something like colors or borders and similar features. And the biggest change is for the search block. So now you can, it's a bit strange when I learned about that you can add color support, but for the button that is in the search form. So you can modify something similar to other blocks, like the background color or the text color, but it's only for the button. And there is also border color support added there. I'm not quite sure if the border is only for the button as well.
I tested it yesterday. I got a little bit sidetracked because I found a bug there, but not a bug. It's more the display thing. But the border color as well as the support for border is actually for both the field, the input field, as well as the button. And you also can have different alignments for that. So it's quite nicely. You can actually, the example in the release notes or the make post was actually in a group block with a image background or a color, a dual tone background, and then a search block on top of it. It's quite nice. Yeah.
So. And with the border radius functionality, you can have really nice effects that you don't have to use rectangles anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rounded borders are in fashion anymore again. So every 25 years we have rounded corners.
Yeah, the good thing is that you need to use background images that swap with JavaScript on the fly like 20 years ago. Yeah, but it's back. And the pull quote block, it also got border and color support. And the examples that were shared in the post that described all the changes in the release includes very interesting effects, like you can use some sort of dotted border that you use like very large dots, and it creates really nice effects for the pull quote. So I encourage everyone to give it a try and check some crazy values there and see how it looks like, because it might turn out that it looks so nice that you would want to have it. Mm-hmm. And that's basically all about features. And we also have several enhancements, which one of them I would consider rather as a feature. This is a button that was added in the publishing flow. So when you schedule or publish the post, there is this sidebar that shows up on the, like it goes from the right side if you are in like regular, like maybe regular, no, like you are using writing English. And if you are using Arabic, it will be go from the other side. Like that's why it's confusing to explain. But anyway, the feature is that it, at the end, there is like summary, what has happened, which site you are using, and you can go and view the post there. But next to it, there is now a button that allows you to create another post.
New post, yeah.
I don't know if it's very useful because I, at least for me, I don't really write another post just after I finish it. The one I rather celebrate.
Yeah, I think it's more for the micro bloggers that kind of want to upload an image and then do the next image and kind of like an Instagram post. But I like that it's now trying to keep a user in the block editor for some publishing flows. I need to check this. So it's in the second step. Oh, it's in the last step of the publishing flow. Yes. So if you you get the view post and the, as you explained it, there's the add a new post button there. I need to test this out, how that behaves in the two-step process for the publishing process. But yeah, so one of my pet peeves is that I started with the block editors. Can I log into my website and then already have add new post as at the first screen that I get to, so I don't have to look for all posts and add new and all that. I just can, because all I do on the website once it's set up is publishing posts, right? So I might as well start there. But this is the end of it, yeah. So after I do one, I can stay in the blog editor with it and update. Yeah, if you do photos, if you say, okay, I want to just highlight certain links and then link out, I like it, yeah. So there's also some enhancements for the widget editor and then for some of the components, but there seems to be quite minuscule, a little bit, not so obvious for people, but it makes the experience a little smoother. One of it is the core data. For the core data, you can pass a query argument to a data selector shortcut. Could you explain that a little bit for me?
So the change for the core data is about passing mostly the context that is going to be used with the REST API. That was actually one of the missing features. So if you know how REST API works, it allows you to fetch the data with different contexts. So let's say to view, you get different set of fields than when you want to edit something. And every REST API endpoint defines it differently. So thanks to this change, you can have full control over that when using core data.
Excellent, yeah. Then we had some bug fixes. One is for the featured image. Now authors can select images that were uploaded by other users. So if an editor uploads an image, now authors can also use them for the featured image and their blog post. And that's certainly helpful. So not, and reduces the duplication of images probably quite a bit in the media library.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I marked is that there was change in the description of the embed blogs that was referencing Instagram. And I was surprised seeing that. And it turns out that Instagram is no longer supported as an embed in the blog editor. So that might be confusing. That was fixed. Yeah. But it's also good to know that Instagram embeds are no longer present in WordPress.
Yeah, I think that was taken out last October when Facebook changed how they, that you now needed a developer account with Facebook to use some of the embed, well, the embeds, they are not no longer an OEmbed publisher. So now they changed it. There are quite a few. Back then, we had quite a few recommendations for plugins, and I certainly can reference that in the show notes again. But I think there was just an oversight to use Instagram as an example on how to use the embed with Instagram not doing it anymore. But the bigger problem was that it was showing up in the inserter when you started typing in Instagram. And so the word count come up. So that was leading the user a little bit astray on their publishing process. Yeah. So the one bug fix also was the most used terms were running into a 403 error for non-administrators. That has been fixed. And then it kind of tripped up a few users, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, so most of the bug fixes were smaller changes closer to the code quality improvements, like for the focal point picker component. There is now additional check that verifies the type is correct, like NAN, which stands for not a number in JavaScript. So nothing really interesting. Like it's just, you know, everything to ensure that there are no unexpected behaviors in some edge cases.
Yeah, but I'm glad that the team takes the time to go through that and fix those little things as well. So then we had some performance updates, and one of them, pretty much only one, that's a drag and drop. And it's now, drag and drop is such a wanted feature, and it needs to work really well to be useful. And Kerry Liu did some changes there and fixes there. So I don't understand exactly what the changes were there.
I don't know. I know it's very complex related to how the browsers work. So if you are keen and learn how you can profile the performance of layouts and, you know, CSS, how it works with drag and drop, it's very well explained in the PR that's linked. And Kerry, she's doing a fantastic job on that field. She has a lot of expertise, so you can follow along if you want to learn more. So one thing that I checked when playing with that is that in the last episode, I was wondering if it is possible to drag and drop a block from the list view to the editor canvas or the other way around. And it turns out that you can.
Wait.
And I was surprised.
No way.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I don't know how it works because I don't think I contributed anything to that functionality at all. But, you know, it's very designed.
Yeah.
If you can do so interesting interactions. One thing I noticed that there's a bit of delay when you drag from the list view to the canvas, then it updates in the canvas, and then the animation starts in the list view. So it's, you know, it's like it's not the perfect experience, but you know, it works.
Right. But it seems that that's something that Kerry was working on to avoid layout and repaints, but you definitely need to have it. So it's all in the right order when you drag it from one canvas to the list view and back. So I can see that that's a great challenge for programmers to get right. Yes. So, and that brings us to the experimentation or the experiment section. And right now there's Riyadh started to have put in a prototype in this plugin for a flex layout supported by the block editor. You made some notes on that.
Yeah, because I first wanted to try how it works, but it turns out that it's not that simple to, you know, use that on your website. So first of all, it's an API change, and that API is hidden behind a special flag. So if you the example is for the group block, and to enable that you need to change the block JSON file of that for that block, and there is experimental layout already present, but it's set to true. If you want to use this new feature, you need to use an object, and there is allow switching flag. But this API is still in progress, it will change for sure, because Riad left a ton of notes how it can evolve. So he said that we could introduce more layouts such as grid or absolute positioning container. So it's really nice when you play with that, but there's one more thing. It only works with full site editing teams that contain team JSON file. So
it needs to be set in a block JSON as well as in the theme JSON?
No, you don't need to do anything in the team JSON, but you need to have a team that have this file, because this experimental layout, it only works with full site editing.
Okay. All right. Cool.
I know it's quite confusing, but I learned it hard way trying to play with that.
Yeah.
But once it's there, it's really nice. So mm-hmm. when you change to the flex, then if you had rows, then you suddenly have items in one row next to each other. And even if you go and try to move one of the inner blocks, then the arrows will be to left and right. So they adapt to the layout, which is pretty nice.
Yeah. I think it was years ago, there was an issue that I wanted that. I put it actually in the actively discussed. So let's talk about it again there. So for the changelog, there's a lot of testing updates and a lot of build tooling updates. Is there anything that stand out that you wanted to talk about today?
There isn't anything that would caught my attention. So I don't have anything to share. I mean, I could, but...
well, you could probably another hour or so about it.
I'm thinking mostly about our listeners and what could be interesting for them. So I didn't identify anything this time.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And mostly this is related to the constant improvements to end-to-end testing and the fact that it's almost stable these days, which is a great improvement for all the contributors.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is actually a new testing team, not a new team, but the test team has more new reps. And Tonya Mark has written about that on the test blog. And so there are some contributors that wanted to get deeper into testing of new versions of the WordPress core, as well as on Gutenberg, and have more look at the tickets for needs unit tests or needs E2E tests and add those flags to the tickets. So it can be quite a bit more stable when it comes out in beta. So I think that's a good development here too. And if you're interested in that, I think that the test team can use your assistance there and your help and your expertise, of course. So
I think I have one thing. So
okay.
Riad Bengela, he's exploring a special website that would track performance metrics over time for the Gutenberg editor. So it's the same thing that you see every time a new Gutenberg release post is published at the bottom of every post. And that would be something that, like a chart that would show you how it changes with every Gutenberg release. So to save some historical data, if that's working, that would be really nice to observe how it all changes.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I just clicked on the link that was in the PR. So I'd like it. It's a website that's on Vercel and talks about the type speed, the inserting, the opening, inserter hover items, the load of the whole editor, selecting, block selecting, and inserter search. So it's quite nice. Yes. I linked through the additional site as well in the show notes. And then there were some documentation changes. Some of them were as minuscule as adding a missing space or changing an end take. But one of them is the missing I18N, the internationalization filters for the documentation that was caught by one of the developers on Twitter, and turned out it didn't come over from when the documentation is automated or is imported into the WordPress.org developer handbook. So that has been fixed now. So you get all the filters that deal with internationalization of your block editor assets.
Yeah, that's really nice for plugin authors if they want to modify translations.
Yeah.
And it exists there since WordPress 5.7, so quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, it wasn't in the documentation. And there was one block API change where you, I think it was one of your PRs, how to improve block assets are versioned. And what's the background of this and why was that important?
Oh, so it was purely technical on the WordPress core side. So there were some concerns that we were using the file time function, which is based on the file system, to generate a version for style sheets, you have more complex setup like several servers, then the value might differ when load balancer kicks in. So it's fine for a single website, but for more complex, it's not so reliable. So the idea is that we now have in block.json version field, so you can provide the version of your block, and that is used for style sheets to define whether browsers should load a newer version of the same style sheet.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of to bust out of the cache, yeah, for the style sheets. Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. Cool.
Yeah, if it is not provided, then WordPress version will be used. Mm-hmm. So it's still not a big deal if someone forgets to do it, but in some cases, if you release often, then you probably should add that to your blogs.
Yeah. It makes it definitely explicit is probably better than just assumed. Yeah. And then there were some code quality issues that were resolved or checked. One of them is a performance issue that's a refactor of the post author component by George Mamardashvili, short Mamaduka. And he refactored it, so it only requests fields that is needed for the rendering, like the ID and the name, and that reduced the data transfer considerably by roughly 50%. So that's these kind of changes are behind the scenes. They're very technical, but it's really important to know that they're happening. Good. So this brings us to the end of the changelog. Yeah, it's a good release, and try out all the new features. And there is one discussion that we mentioned earlier was about the flex layouts. Now that the prototype is in the plugin, Riyad Benguela, who published that, also opened another issue to discuss further iterations, and we'll have it in the show notes for you. It's 33687, the issue, and he describes the current state of the flow layout and the flex layout. And then an experimental way to switch between the two, as Jagosh mentioned earlier. And then he also outlines concepts that will result in a refactoring of some of the blocks to a declarative behavior on context. But Matthias Ventura also chimed in and mentioned the grid layouts to be worth exploring as well. So if you, dear listeners, want to get in an early discussion of a new feature, this is the time for this feature. Subscribe to the issue, chime in the discussion, and lend your expertise and your ideas to the developer team. I know that way back in 2019, for instance, I think in November 19, Automattic published a grid layout block. And I wonder how many of the learned lessons can be applied to the core editor. So I'm also linked to that particular plugin, and it had his last updates about 3 weeks ago. So it's still in, and it has about 100,000 active installs. So it's definitely something people are looking for. And your discussion, you can definitely contribute to that.
Yeah, right. From my perspective, I think that the biggest advantage of the current exploration is that it reuses an existing block and only added as a feature.
okay, well, this is our bell. It's the end of the changelog. So we are at the end of a show, and I want to remind everyone to, if you have something that we should talk about, or questions or news that you want us to include, send them to email to changelog@gutenbergtimes.com. That's changelog@gutenbergtimes.com. Yeah, if you want to write a review, if you like it, write a review for us, please, in either the iTunes or Stitcher or any other of the podcast directories. It would really help us to spread this wide and far. All right. Well, thank you, Greg. This was a great time to spend with you again.
Anything thank you, else? Birgit. And thank you. Thank you for all our listeners. We are really glad to have your support. And so to see you all in 2 weeks.
Yes, 2 weeks. And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.